Well, good day and welcome to another episode here of the Disaster Podcast. I'm your host, Jamie Davis, the Pod Medic, and it's great to have all of you here checking out this very special episode. We've got a different sort of episode for you all tonight, and we'll get into that in a little bit. Before we do that, though, remember to check out everything over at disasterpodcast.com for all of our episodes, how to subscribe on your device, whether it's Android or iTunes, iOS, whatever, you can get our program subscribed to, and we'll show you how to do that over there on the site. Without too much further ado, let's jump in and introduce our folks for this evening. And of course, first off, and most importantly, my co-host, Sam Bradley.
Well, I wouldn't say I'm more important than Dr. Joe, but I appreciate that. And I'm still, you know, just back from Scotland, so I still got a little bit of that on my head, but trying to catch up on everything. And, you know, Jamie, as much as we have great guests come on the show and we really enjoy them, sometimes it's just fun for you and me and Joe to cut loose and just have a good time and talk about whatever we want to talk about. And I think tonight we're going to go to the movies. Right, Joe?
Sounds great. It's a date.
Dr. Joe Holly from Paragon Medical Education Group. Joe, it's great always to have you on the show. And this week, you and I got to get out and get a chance to go see the new movie at the time we were recording this, San Andreas, because we're a disaster show and we wanted to see how does this movie portray disasters. So we'll get into what you thought of that. Sam, of course, you didn't get a chance to see it. You had some other things going on and couldn't get away, but you live in California, so maybe you can ground us a little bit in the reality of what might happen in a major quake along the San Andreas fault line.
And I have worked a couple of them as well. So, yes, that should be fun.
All right. Well, you know, let's start off here. I'm going to go ahead and defer to you, Joe, first. Why don't you just give us your general impressions of the movie? Did you like it? Did you not like it? Was it too much over the top?
Over the top is a good description for sure. there was certainly a lot of Hollywood literary freedom in there. No doubt about it. I will say I thought Rock Johnson did a great job playing my part. I was very happy with him standing in. So he was good. I sort of suspended belief, I think, for a lot of it. And I thought they got some parts pretty well represented. Clearly, the computer guys were a lot busier than the real actors were. And other parts of it were hokishly ridiculous. But overall, I'd have to give it about a 5. I thought it was your pretty standard action disaster flick. And a little suspense to it, but pretty predictable overall.
That was kind of my impression too, and I too had to suspend my first responder disbelief and say I'm going to give Hollywood permission to be Hollywood. I wasn't expecting something to be too realistic because it's not a documentary. They wanted it to be this over the top action movie with insane crazy things going on. But I still, as I went through the movie, I was mentally checking off some things that I was like, oh, we could talk about this on the show. And there was some good discussion fodder that I have to wonder, people living in earthquake zones, you in Memphis are in that earthquake zone, Joe, Sam in California, you guys have an earthquake area, prone area. I wonder if this generated conversation. So we'll talk a little bit about that later. One of the first things that came up for me, this is going to be full of spoilers, folks, so we're going to try not to give too much away, but this, you really should see the movie first and then come listen to this if you intend to see the film. The first thing that really got to me that really annoyed the heck out of me right away was Dwayne The Rock Johnson portrays this Iraq war vet who's a helicopter pilot, and we know many of our emergency services helicopter pilots come from military backgrounds, and he kind of took off at the instant onset of disaster. The first thing he did was take off to rescue his family, and kind of freelancing on his own with the LA Fire Department's helicopter to go rescue his ex-wife. And by himself, with no one else in the helicopter with him. That's part of that suspend the disbelief thing. But this was one of the things we've talked about again and again and again on the show, Sam, is that you can't freelance in a disaster because you utilize and use up resources that could be better used in other operations.
Well, not to mention he's utilizing the fire department helicopter without permission. That could be a bit of a problem. but this is loaded right there. Just that one thing is kind of loaded with a number of different things going on here. But yeah, your point is well made, Jamie. And I know I had this discussion last weekend with some of my fire guys at my other department. And it's like, well, what would you do? And some of them still maintain that is my first priority. So I think it's really up to departments to make sure they have things in place, a good communication ability so people can communicate with their families. And I think once they know that things are okay, then they're going to be able to commit themselves to the job because everybody obviously is going to have that concern. But taking a helicopter and going to rescue your ex-wife probably wouldn't work too well. What do you think, Joe?
Oh, I agree completely. Let's see. We self-dispatched. We literally took control of a state and federal asset for our own personal use. Not only that, he managed to fly from Los Angeles to San Francisco and back on one tank of fuel, which is pretty impressive. And that autopilot and that helicopter is the most amazing thing I have ever seen.
Yeah, he hit auto hover and that thing just stood rock steady. It was pretty amazing.
That was incredible.
I love it. So right there, your whole sense of disbelief was front and center, right?
Now that said, I mean, there were buildings crumbling around them and there were people injured and people, some people rendering aid and others just pushing people out of the way. And so in some respects, I think that very clearly represents how chaotic this type of situation would be in a major earthquake, that people would be rushing to evacuate. They wouldn't be paying attention a lot to anything but getting themselves out of there. Some people would be rendering aid and trying to keep a cool head, but it would be basically chaos. And so if you get 50 people in a room on a sky in a high rise and they all have to evacuate or all have to figure out what to do at the same time, I think the movie did a good job of representing human nature. Joe, do you feel that way?
Yeah, I think, they certainly drove home that, I'm going to save everybody except myself kind of attitude that I think a lot of folks in this business tend to carry some and sort of carried it to the extreme. But I do think that at the core of that is before you can sort of go on and take care of everybody else, you got to make sure that you and your own are okay. Clearly, a better way to do that than flying a helicopter up there would have been, perhaps a text message or some sort of shared signal or something else to say I'm okay and, it's all right to go ahead and do your thing.
Well, that's boring, Joe.
I know, it doesn't make for a great movie at all.
On that note, Jamie, I got to say, with this idea of everybody running out of the building, which I perceive happening, and you're right, that is definitely human nature. You would get people that are helping, and you'd get people that are just running over the top of everybody. But I have to say, from an earthquake-prone point of view, running out of the building isn't always the best thing you can do unless the damn thing's coming up, down around your ears. And one of the points that was made in this article was one of the things that the reviewer liked was there was some tech dude running around saying, duck and cover, which in reality is probably the best idea. It actually shows a picture of two people under a desk. Because when you think about it, when there's a quake and you're in a big city and you've got tall buildings, many of which have glass facades, and all that glass starts coming down or the facades themselves, that's how people get injured. Because they're not wearing, metal suits. So when all of that stuff starts coming down into the streets, That's what's going to hurt people.
And we actually had a main character, Joe, get injured by falling glass from one of those crumbling facades.
Yeah, absolutely.
Ah.
So that did happen. And you're right, Sam. You know, the folks in the scientists in the film, the folks at Caltech that kind of got an inkling that this was more than just a standard quake, that it was going to be major aftershocks and things going on. And this was a shift of the entire fault up and down the coast, not just localized, you know, which was what lent to the movie's scope. But at the same time, they pulled the news crew that was there under the desk with them and under the conference table and said, this is the best place to be. Don't stand in the doorway. Get under here. Get something, you know, some frame on top of yourself. And I think that represented, I think that's probably what you read about in the paper.
Right. Yeah, I just found that. Duck cover and hold on. And even though Caltech itself was falling apart, they get credit for the fact that was probably the wisest point of discussion in the program, is that's what people really should do until the dust pretty much settles.
So the next thing I saw and kind of that it brought to mind all the things we've discussed here on the year and a half or so we've been doing this show is the fluid nature of disasters and the changing nature. And we've talked about this regarding Katrina, that, you know, it was the levees breaking that caught everybody by surprise. It seems to me that it's not always the event itself, but the after events, the unforeseen things that happen second, third, and fourth following a major event, like building collapse, aftershocks from an earthquake. We saw that in Nepal. You know, the buildings that didn't come down from the first quake ended up coming down in the second quake. This is what I think the movie did a good job of, was pointing out to people that there are going to be unforeseen things that happen, and you need to rely on your own resiliency and your own preparedness level of knowing what to do, having a plan, all the things we've talked about here numerous times on the show, and making sure that you are self-sufficient for that golden 72 hours period before we can get state and federal assets into you.
Yeah, and on that note, another point that was made in this article was somebody that found a cooler full of water and was running around with that water, which made the strong point of exactly what you're saying, Jamie, is whether people think about that at home occasionally, but they don't always think about it in their work environment. And you could just as easily get stuck there for 72 hours as you can at home. So, you know, my chiefs laugh at me because I have a drawer in my office that's full of food and you know, canned goods and extra water and stuff. And I said, yeah, really? Well, if we're stuck in this building for 72 hours, guess who you're coming to? You want a cup of coffee, you're going to come down here and get it. So I think that's a good point, too.
Yeah, there's no reason you can't have a case of bottled water under your desk or, you know, in a cabinet or something in your office and workplace and be prepared that way, not just having it at home. I think it made a good point of that people needed to be prepared to shelter in place wherever they were. That might be their cars. There was an elderly couple kind of trapped with their vehicle that showed up in the movie. And it just brought to mind people were going to be on the roads and need to shelter in place. Maybe they wouldn't be able to get out because they had a damage to their vehicle following the quake. There were all kinds of things that came up that pointed to me that we need to kind of have a preparedness mindset or plan given many different factors and locations. Joe, what were your thoughts?
I agree with you. You know, I think they didn't do too bad a job capturing some of that in there. I was a little frustrated, I think, by the conveniently intermittent access to cell phone signals and power and, you know, the ability apparently to pump gasoline into any sort of vehicle with no power anywhere. You know, that sort of thing was, I think, a little misleading, that there was going to be that there would be some opportunity to take advantage of that. And we're so reliant now on our technology, especially our personal technology that we carry around in our belt all the time, that I think a lot of folks are going to be very lost very quickly there. But I will have to say that I didn't see a lot of people running around the victims, quote unquote, spending a lot of time on their phone. They were accurately not on their phone because, of course, it wasn't going to do them any good. So,
well, Joe, going back to what Jamie was just saying about, I think that was a really salient point in terms of the earthquake or the tornado or the hurricane is the act that starts this process of all these other things happening. And you know, while he was talking about that, my mind is going to things blowing up and hazardous materials and trees down in the middle of the road and all those kinds of things. So if you were to have an earthquake in Memphis, what are the other sorts of things that you would, as emergency preparedness people, have to be concerned with?
Oh, I think there's just a myriad. You know, the scene with the protagonists on the boat, you know, cruising through what was left of downtown San Francisco with the trash sort of flooding everywhere was pretty salient. Obviously, a lot of the stuff in that trash they you know, didn't get into, including, you know, petroleum and human waste and all that sort of stuff. There weren't a lot of dead animals, whether that's, you know, pets or livestock or anything else that were around anywhere. The concerns over, especially after an event, a flood event or a tsunami event like that, is, you know, washing sea life into places it doesn't belong and chasing snakes and those sort of things out of their habitat into other places where people may be. So a lot of those things can cross. And I think a tremendous amount of hazmat stuff that really wasn't even talked about at all. I can't imagine the amount of, you know, chemicals and petroleum and sewage that would all be mixed together to make a pretty nasty concoction there. So
that'd be too yucky. Hollywood.
Well, and we look back to a couple of years ago in Japan, you know, the event that's still affecting them today, to this day, is the failure of the nuclear plant. But it was not the initial event. That was a secondary event. And so it again points out to people that you need to know your area. You need to know evacuation routes. If you have something like a nuclear plant nearby, is it likely to be affected by whatever has struck your area? And if so, you need to go in a different direction. All of these things play into this preparedness idea that was pointed out by what was shown in the film. And again, it's just these secondary events, the tsunami that followed up the earthquake event that caught so many people in the movie by surprise because they were all heading to the shoreline to get evacuated. And that was the wrong direction to go because the tsunami was coming. But, you know, these are all things that happened after the fact of the initial quake.
Well, and on that note, a tsunami couldn't happen. Just so you guys in California that are listening to this may not have thought about it, but we have slip faults. So first of all, there's going to be no hole in the ground. About the only time there's going to be a strong enough earthquake for that kind of thing, it would be in the far northwest or maybe Alaska, where they've been known to have, you know, 9-point-something earthquakes. But here we have, especially where I live, right off the Delta, and of course, I don't know, you know, how much of a tsunami would go inland if it was even possible. But one of the things that was suggested in this article I was reading is if he had just found his way into a slough, which is protected and there's calmer area, that would have been a wiser thing to do. And I'm not entirely sure what he did do, but apparently he was trying to beat it, and that doesn't usually work very well.
He rode up the tsunami wave to get to the top before it crested.
Oh, did he now?
Yeah, it was 25 stories tall, but he was able to grit his teeth hard enough to make that boat make it.
Yeah. Boy, what a guy.
Yeah. I mean, and that's, again, one of those suspend disbelief things. You know, it's not necessarily the right thing that would have occurred. That tsunami was larger than it probably would have actually been. I mean, there was there were all those Hollywood things going on. And I, like I said, when I saw a Hollywood thing happening, I kind of just said, okay, I give them permission. You know, they have my blessing. It's a movie. I get it. But what was the lesson that could be learned? And that was kind of, yeah, there were things like that. I know the science of it. One of the things that concerned me, and I watched this, and Sam, I don't know if your article you read touched on this, was the ultimate failure of the buildings in this quake. Everything came down almost. And I know that the modern high rises and things are supposedly built to withstand the quakes of certain levels and magnitude. So I wasn't sure how much of that building collapse was realistic. Certainly in older neighborhoods and, you know, the brick facades and things like that, they're going to come down. I get that. But the failure of these major steel structures made me think back to 9/11 and how no one thought the towers would come down the way they did. Because they thought they would withstand, not that they could predict that the plane was going to fly into it, but when the plane flew into it, they didn't think the structures were going to come down. They thought the steel would hold up.
Right. They weren't supposed to. But on that note, no, you know, pretty much everything in San Francisco, certainly any newer buildings, are retrofitted, and they have just rebuilt the Bay Bridge in the last few years. Only now, unfortunately, they are finding there are some weak points that they're going to have to fix. But the reality is, if we had an earthquake, and I don't know what the magnitude of the one was in the movie, if that were possible, which in reality it's not, then maybe some of those buildings would come down. But given the reality of the magnitude that we would get, even from the San Andreas, you're not going to have the whole city coming down. And when we, in 1906, when the Marina District fell apart, it's because that's the first time that area was hit with a huge quake, and it was 1906, and they were old, you know, masonry buildings, and that's before anybody even thought about retrofitting for it. So I think in this day and age, most of California, most of San Francisco is going to fare quite well.
Yeah, I think the magnitude, Joe, was 9.4 or 9.6, somewhere in there. I mean, it was,
yeah, you know,
they were comparing it to the Anchorage quake back in the 60s.
And that was 9.7, I think.
Yeah, and they were comparing it to that magnitude as being, you know, this is going to be as bad or worse than that. And but you're saying that in the San Andreas fault, because of the nature of the fault, it would never be that high.
That's
or unlikely.
Yeah, and that's what the article was saying as well, because we have a slip faults, and they don't function in the same way. And they said if we had any water post earthquake, it would be very minimal. It would make ripples, basically, is what they said. We'd never have a tsunami. We'd never have the ground opening up. And I guess that was probably in there because it always is. Those things are Hollywood. Yeah.
Yeah. There was like this huge canyon that opened up
and
in the ground that they had to drive around because the road was impassable.
Well, as much as they joke about Nevada being beachfront property, it's really not going to happen. Not in our lifetime anyway.
Good to know.
So, I did, though, a couple of things on that note that I thought they did do a nice job of. The one scene there sort of out in the valley where the gas station where the earth is cracked open, you know, all the way to China kind of thing. I thought they did do a nice job representing the slip fault that Sam was just talking about. I mean, if you looked at how things were lined up there, clearly they had shifted by, you know, some number of yards. And it was also interesting to note that on one side of the fault, the ground level was significantly lower than on the other. So I thought they did a nice job sort of getting that sense of tectonic plate movement there. And I remember also on some of the wide angle shots of the helicopter flying back to LA or San Francisco or wherever they were going, you could see the wave as it moved across the surface of the earth. And I thought that was extremely well done. That was a great depiction of, you know, what an earthquake wave is actually going to look like.
Yeah, I thought the same thing.
And it's, you know, I actually stood out with a friend I was standing, we were standing outside in front of his house when an earthquake came. And it was the weirdest thing where we were actually looking down the street and seeing it looked like some kind of monster under the street that had pumps. You could actually see the waves coming. And both of us were disaster workers for Red Cross at the time. And we just kind of looked at each other and said, really? That's what it looks like. And hold on to your shorts because here it comes. Yeah. And it did. Yeah, it was quite bizarre. But Joe, tell me about what happened in the movie to Hoover Dam.
Oh, that was quite interesting. So early in the movie, is they're attempting to verify that they now have the ability to predict quakes. Hoover Dam was struck by an earthquake and, of course, devastated in spectacular style. It was awesome, by the way. Of course, led to great loss of life and, unleashed the river there, the Colorado River, where the dam is located. I did find it interesting to note that the water level behind the dam was higher than it's been in probably 20 years. That was just one of those strange things. But, of course, that led to great flooding downstream. They didn't really make too much of that.
They didn't, and I was expecting them to. I really thought that they'd go into this wave wiping out things downstream, and they kind of skipped over it because this isn't a flood movie. It's an earthquake movie.
Exactly.
And the point is, Hoover Dam does not get earthquakes like that, that would ever actually happen, just so you know.
Well, the movie explained it away that there were unknown faults that extended into Nevada.
Oh, they got new ones.
Yeah,
they made new ones.
New fault they just found.
Yeah. That was how they explained it away. But, it was minor quakes that they had found that were, minor tremors of, 2.3 or whatever on this Richter scale. And, that was their explanation behind it. But it was, cinematically, Joe, you're right. It was spectacular. I mean, it was everything.
It was cool to watch, for sure.
Failure of the sluice gates and everything. I mean,
oh yeah, it was great. The special effects were pretty well done there for sure.
Well, I have to ask, did Rock get back with his ex-wife? Or maybe that's a spoiler, but I think we spoiled the thing anyway.
like I said, I warned people in the beginning. He gets, in the end, he rescues his family, he rescues his ex-wife, and then his daughter is up with the ex-wife's boyfriend in San Francisco on a trip to take her back to college. Because he couldn't go because of the devastation in Nevada. So he was held back from taking her to college. And that's why he was off in the helicopter getting ready to get it ready to go to Nevada when the earthquake hit California. That's the premise. And so he rescues the ex-wife and they go together to save their daughter in San Francisco.
So if we go into next month, he's going to end up getting fired for stealing the helicopter.
Oh, and not just stealing it. I mean, he destroyed it. I mean, there was
he destroyed it at the end. That's yeah. right.
He destroyed it and ended up driving and then taking a boat and everything else to get there. But anyway, they get back together and rescue each other. And again, it points out some things about just the preparedness. She was better prepared. The daughter was better prepared because she was the daughter of a responder who had trained her to know what to look for, to know what was in, they find an abandoned fire truck and she knows there's going to be water bottles in there. So she opens up a couple of the side compartments and finds some water bottles and finds some other things. These kind of things. And it just, again, leads back to that you need to be prepared to take care of yourself, to take care of your family, to take care of the people around you, whether you're a manager in a workplace that's in a disaster-prone area or whatever the case may be. You're right, Sam. You might need to have a shelf in the storage closet dedicated to some, a bucket of MREs and some other things and some bottled water just in case everyone in the office gets stranded there for 72 hours. And this comes back to this recurring theme we've had here on the show about, personal preparedness, even as responders, it is incumbent upon us for ourselves and our families to be personally prepared.
Well, speaking of daughters of responders, did you not take your daughter with you? And if so, what did she think of the movie?
She loved it.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, every now and then I'd snort in like, you know, disgust at something that they did that was just
going
ridiculous.
With you must have been
and she'd
fun.
Just kind of pop me and go, "Hey, Dad." They're used to that when I watch medical shows or, you know, I'm sure Joe's family's the same way. You can't watch medical TV shows. You know, if I see one more person shock a flat line in a TV show, I'm just going to.
We got to be really boring. We only should go to movies with each other, you know, instead of driving our families crazy. Good point.
Good point. So, I got the same grief from my son every time I roll my eyes over some, you know, bird.
So Jamie, what do you think, both of you guys, what do you think the takeaways were? Because you've been alluding to that all the way through this conversation. Well, what are the good takeaways?
The good takeaways were this morning on two different news programs, since I've seen the movie, yesterday and again this morning, I saw them talking about San Andreas and asked the question of their audience, are we really prepared for disasters? And Joe, you probably didn't do this, but I, because I'm a film guy, I stick around and watch the credits because I feel like all these people put their work on the film. I should, you know, see their names scroll by, even though I can't sure. read them. They go by so fast. And about halfway through the credits, after they did the initial, like, this is the director, these are the stars, right before they started going into all of the crew and the effects guys, they had a thing in there for more information on preparedness, see ready.gov, and then also had the Red Cross URL there too. And that I thought was responsible of the filmmakers. I wish they could have put it somewhere else, but I probably think under contract they can't put anything in front of that first section of titles.
Yeah.
But as soon as they were able to, they put it was separated from everything else. So if you were sitting there, it clearly stood out that ready.gov was where you needed to look at. ready.gov/earthquake. And
that was the final comment from the reviewer, is saying if anything good comes out of this, even though it won't happen like this, it does raise awareness that we're always at risk. And it's not just us being at risk of earthquakes or Joe being at risk for tornadoes. Or in fact, Jamie, you had sent us a link to another article on the fact that your area is due for a good hit from a hurricane because you haven't had one for a while. So we all have these different things that we can't just sit there and go, that just happens to other people or it happens in other areas. If you're not prepared, you have no one to blame but yourself.
Yeah, and so that was my takeaway. I mean, the media, I think, and I don't know if you'd seen anything similar, Joe, but the media really, I was happy to see that it spurred discussion, that this film, which they could have just blown off as a, you know, Hollywood action flick and not really talked about it other than to say it topped the box office. But no, they actually did a short segment on, are people really prepared? So it if nothing else, it's generated discussion. It's made people think, and hopefully people in those areas will think about how I would respond in an earthquake myself. What I hope other people take from it is, like you said, Sam, people on the East Coast, are you ready for the next Hurricane Sandy that's going to catch New York by surprise or hit North Carolina or any of the other areas along the coast that haven't been hit in the last 20 years? These are all questions. You know, there is another there is another Katrina out there somewhere. Will it do the same devastation or act the same way? Maybe, maybe not. But it's going to come down to preparedness, and hopefully other areas are recognizing that for themselves as well.
And I would hope too that people in businesses may go to their boss and say, "Hey, I just saw this movie, and what are we going to do if an earthquake hits or a tornado hits? What's our plan?" And if there isn't one, maybe these people actually start thinking about it.
Joe, how about your area? I mean, we've talked about Memphis being, you know, on the fault line there and in the center of the country. And you have, do you reach out to businesses? Do you know of the local emergency operations staff reaching out to businesses saying it's not just preparedness at home, but preparedness at work as well?
Yeah, it's actually a fairly active process here. You know, the building codes here have continued to tighten up. the soil type here is pretty dramatically different than what it is in California. It's not bedrock. It's very soft soil that's full of water, and you know, in the event that you start shaking that, it literally becomes quicksand, and you know, most of the buildings here are going to sink into the earth and disappear. You know, at the next big earthquake here, but I certainly do see a fair amount of preparedness activity around that. Our emergency operations center has drills related to that pretty frequently. There's probably not as much media coverage as I would like to see in regards to that. And it gets a little bit hyped when it is done, which is a little disappointing because I think they have been such rare occurrences here. But as we've said in the past, the concern is that the next time we get a big quake, it's going to be a very devastating quake here just because of the location, the geography, and the physics to the soil here.
Joe, do you cover any of that kind of thing at Paragon when you're doing some of your other scenarios? Do you touch on that? Or do you have plans to maybe create some kind of a scenario around that?
Well, we have certainly done earthquake-related scenarios before. You know, that the focus in general has been on response just because of the audience that we're usually dealing with. But as we've expanded into broader areas, and by that I mean law enforcement community and even the education community, there's a much greater component of stuff to do beforehand, planning, how systems work, and things to do to protect yourself and your family and your workplace that are related to, you know, they're just more salient for those audiences.
Good point.
Yeah, Joe, you guys do such a great job with that, trying to bring together these important lessons learned or learned from around the country. We talked about this a couple weeks ago with Sean Maxwell and the lessons learned from the mudslide and how it wasn't what they expected. It was something new for the geologists out there, but they took those lessons and began to apply them across the country and have major discussions on, all right, how does this change our response plan? And I know that Paragon, you guys are just right on top of that, which I think is what makes you such a valuable resource out there for organizations that are trying to work with their budgets to come up with good, high-quality training to do things in a certain way and have their crews come away with really something incredibly valuable that's going to last them a long time.
Absolutely. And I think it is very much about, you know, taking a longer term view of all that sort of stuff. You know, there was an awful lot of stuff compressed into a very short period of time in the movie. And a lot of interesting response ideas. I don't know how really realistic many of those were. I mean, I think if you really think you're going to find an operating landline and a rotary telephone in Chinatown today, I'm not so sure about that. I'm not sure anybody can find a rotary phone or that anybody less than 21 would know how to use it. But, you know, it's some interesting MacGyverish type ideas in there anyway.
I love that, Joe.
Oh yeah, that happened. Yeah, she said we can't use our cell phones, won't work, but if the landlines might work if we can find an old phone to plug into it, and they find the plug that is attached to the credit card machine, and they try that, and it's a live line. Now that because it's hardwired, because it's copper, it could actually have been live. You know, if the towers were down, it's possible. Yeah, okay, maybe. Like Joe said, probably not, but it was certainly worth a try to reach. Now, the fact that she called and reached her father's cell phone in the midst of this disaster is the ridiculous part of it. If she had been calling an operations center or something to report in, that line might have worked. We talk about that a lot in our area because people lose power quite frequently, and we tell them, you know, you've got your cell phones. If you run out of battery, remember your phone has a hard line in it. Always have that $10 Walmart special dial, you know, old-fashioned phone that you can plug into the wall and get a signal, because the phone system runs their own power from generators and will have power for an extended period of time if you need to call for help.
Well, you know, you're actually reminding me of a real-life thing that happened in 2000. Was it? It wasn't. I can't remember. 1986, I think. There was a big earthquake, and it wasn't huge, but for the area it was, in where I was working in Whittier in Southern California, and it disabled all of the communications in the area, and our ambulance company was literally a block away from the hospital, but there was no means of communicating between one and the other, and they found literally one line in the hospital that was hot, and it worked, and so we devised a plan by which I would have a radio and go stand by that phone and communicate with somebody else with a radio, you know, at our admin. And, you know, it just reminded me of that scenario, as you find that one hotline and you find your best way to use it. So it sounds like it actually did work in the movie.
Yeah, it did. And you know, it was what it was. But, you know, it just comes down to it was an entertaining film for what it was. As a responder, if I got beyond the response issues with some of the things going on there, it was spectacular. It was everything a Hollywood action movie was supposed to be. So from that aspect, it was entertaining. You know, I would have given it about a 5 or a 6 as well, just like Joe did. So out of 10, it's my family calls it a good rental, or wait for it. It'll come out on Netflix.
There you go.
Great. I'm waiting. Video. Yeah.
So, excellent. Hey, Joe, where can folks find you guys at Paragon if they want to find out more about how they can bring your system into their jurisdiction, put together a major training event for them?
Well, they can find me under my pseudonym Rock Johnson pretty much anywhere. And Paragon is on the web at ParagonMedicalEducationGroup.com or ParagonMedicalGroup.com. As well as our Facebook page by the same name. And our Twitter feed is ParagonMedEDU.
Excellent. And Sam, how about you?
Well, you can find me in the usual social media places under Sam Bradley or Sam Bradley 11, and most certainly at the disasterpodcast.com website, where we hope that you will come up and give us some comments on this episode and some of the others, and let us know what you'd like us to talk about. And where do they find you, Jamie?
Well, they can find me under the handle PodMedic in most places on social media. And, you know, folks, Sam's right. Go over to disasterpodcast.com. Leave a comment. If you saw the movie, what were your thoughts? Leave your own review in the comments box for this episode. We'd really love to hear from you.
Perfect.
Do you agree with what we had to say? Do you think we were too forgiving? Were we being too nice to the Hollywood producers out there? Or were we right on target? We'd love to hear your response and let us know what you think. So get back in touch with us over at disasterpodcast.com. And we love to hear from you. And you'll find out how to subscribe and get hooked up to the show over there. And whether you've got an Android device or an iOS device or on your computer, there are ways to subscribe right there on the front page, and you can do that right over there. Sam, you know, this was a crazy disaster movie, but even so, there were some medically accurate things going on, like the one of the main characters getting hit by falling glass and having major laceration as a result. People that were dealing with getting the proper equipment and the proper supplies they needed to survive this disaster. And I think we've touched on this every time we close out the show.
We do, and whether it's in the movies or whether it's in real life, disaster medicine is not your everyday medicine.